The opinions expressed by the speakers in this podcast are their own and do not reflect the views of any specific organization or culture. Please be advised that this episode includes discussion on sensitive topics, including sexual abuse, which some listeners may find distressing. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Ground Zero Growth. My name is Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbot. I'm joined today with my guest, Kara Viatori, with the Director of Information Technology at Moxa. How are you doing today, Kara?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. So we've already been having such great conversation, decided we got to hit the record button. I want to dive into that last name already because I feel like that's just an excellent start. You said there's a story already to your last name that kind of speaks to your legacy already. So I think, can we dive into that?
Yeah, sure. So for you, this will be a repeat. I was sharing that our last name was chosen by the women in my family about 10 years ago. We had unfortunately lost my cousin in a pretty traumatic way. And I think often in those situations in life, you find yourself evaluating, you know, what haven't I done with my life? What do I want to do with my life? And in a small part, one of the things that we realized was that all of us didn't identify with our birth name. We didn't find anything good about it. Although with time now, I think that that's not quite accurate for me, but there are good things about my family. But at the time it was like, we realized that we just wanted a name that meant something deeper to us and wanted to distance ourselves from the legacy of abuse that came with, in particular, the men in our families and their name that they passed on, you know. So we decided to change it and wanted something that, again, we connected more deeply with. And so we kind of went looking and I found in Latin this word, Viator, which meant traveler. And I think we only had like a short list of maybe four options. I cannot remember what the other ones were. But so we decided Viatori, which yeah, means traveler, and we pronounce it wrong. So for our last name, we say Viatori. And yeah, about four women in my family changed our names, and my sister's kiddos are the first generation born with that name in our family. And it means a lot to us. And interestingly enough, after that, in the last, I'd say, 5 or 6 years, I've actually been, I love traveling, and I've been traveling a lot more to more, you know, far-flung places that I wouldn't have expected. For instance, I just got back from Bolivia and never would have thought I would be in South America at all. So it's interesting how I feel like that's part of, you know, ending up where I am is calling that into my life. So yeah, that's where the name came from and that's why we chose it. And we pronounce it wrong. We know. So
hey, you know, it's it adds that extra flair to it. So, and I wanted to give you credit already too, because when we were first talking, there was a slight deviation from when you retold the story here. You said, in this case, perpetrated by the men in our family, which I really appreciated because in my mind, it indicated you thought deeply of this. And, you know, abuse can come from anywhere, perpetrated by anyone. And it's just so relevant in this case that in your family, it's men. And I love that.
That's right.
It's been some of the men. And I mm-hmm. love that your family is taking charge and flipping it on its head and rewriting the legacy.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's really important too, to be very clear that it's abuse can come from anyone. Yeah, didn't mean to leave that part out.
No. I know you didn't. I know you didn't. It was, and that's why I wanted to bring it back and also call attention to it, because I think it's beautiful. So that's a perfect segue into, can you kind of tell me about Moxa, the work at Moxa, and your work at Moxa?
Sure. So Moxa is a Kansas City-based organization that works on both sides of the state line, Kansas and Missouri. We serve seven counties, I believe, and we have about 110 staff. And the work that we do is centered around countering sexual assault. So that looks like counseling, yes, we provide free counsel. All of our services are free, regardless of which particular department or departments you receive services from. So we have quite a large counseling staff. A lot of our services center around counseling people from 7 years old to, 100 plus, any gender. And because, as we've already mentioned, perpetrators don't have a gender, and neither do victims of sexual violence. And so we serve a wide range of people and ages in our counseling staff. We also have an advocacy department, which serves for hospital activation. So someone is actually in a crisis. A lot of times nurses will call Moxa, and our on-call advocates and volunteers will be dispatched to the hospital, as well as advocates for reporting, for joining someone when they're reporting at a police station, because, as we all know now, that can be a huge burden to actually reporting a crime, is the experience with police. So we educate both, again, with police, we educate departments on how to be more trauma-informed when they're interviewing victims. And we educate kids in schools about consent. So that's part of the prevention aspect of how do we make sure that not only are we treating it if it occurs, if sexual violence occurs, but how to prevent it. So we work to design safer spaces in an environmental capacity, city planning capacity. So we have some folks who will talk, it's called CEPTED, crime prevention through environmental design, I think. And so that's the actual design of a space that minimizes the potential for violence to occur. We have a legal department, so small but mighty, two staff members who work for clients when we're going into court for any kind of reason, for protective orders or actually prosecuting sexual violence crimes. And I hope I'm not forgetting anybody, because we do such a wide range of work. And prior to my coming on at Moxa, which was about 2 years ago, I didn't know about all that. I just knew about the counseling side. So I think it's really interesting the work that we do to try to prevent sexual violence as well, and educate not just kids, but adults too, about how to ask for consent, what consent looks like, and to try to prevent, because I think personally, a lot of sexual violence situations come about because we don't have a culture of consent. We don't understand how the impact of our actions. We get a lot of mixed messages from movies, and I know I've looked back at some of the 80s and 90s movies and been like, what? I had no idea what I was learning from this movie. And some of my favorites, and I'll go back and I'll be like, wow, that was really problematic, but we just didn't know. And so that's where I think that power of education is really important too. So that's what Moxa does. What I do is I am, as you said, the director of information technology at Moxa. And prior to my coming on board, there was no internal IT staff. We had an external IT vendor, which we still have. And so I came on board to help shore up security, be that internal person who really understands our environment and is guiding the procedures and policies and that external vendor relationship to make sure that we protect all of this really important private information that we are custodians of.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's a lot. That's a lot of fantastic stuff. I love what you guys are doing and the depth of it, 'cause some of the stuff, though it might sound disjointed to somebody that's not hugely familiar with the sexual assault side. So like you talk about the legal department, I wouldn't have been hugely familiar with this except for I was at an organization that helps support nonprofits, and one of them was a nonprofit that deals specifically in women that have been trafficked. And what was interesting was they said that the problem with women that have been trafficked is that the notion is that they're complicit. And so, you know, legal act, they have rap sheets and warrants because by definition, they're prostitutes, even though it's a culture that has made them submissive to anyway. They gave a story of a woman that literally showed up to the home in doused in gasoline. She got away, and the home was certain that they needed to call the police, but she didn't want to because she had a list of warrants. And so it took an attorney and a law firm to help get those expunged so she could, because you're talking about a scenario where you want to come back from that perfect world, and that's not some, well, just stop thing. That's a progressive movement. And then what you talked about with the training aspect of the departments, you know, these are situations where you can't just have the same kind of direct conversation per se. You have to be careful because you don't want to trigger a defensiveness that isn't going to progress. Or I don't even know how to say it because I'm not, as you can tell, I'm not a certified counselor per se. But
Neither am I.
yeah, it's interesting. So, because there's other organizations too that I've talked to people, and anyway, so tell me about, so did you grow up in Kansas City then?
I grew up in St. Joseph, and so not far away. And I moved to Kansas City with my then boyfriend at about 2022 maybe for a job, my first big job in IT.
Oh, in 22? Okay, so this is
When I
relatively
was
recent.
22, no, when I
Okay,
was
okay, okay, okay.
22, so this would have been I'm terrible with numbers, but
You're fine.
early
I'm too.
2000s.
No problem. Yeah. Okay. So, tell me about what brought you into tech?
Looking back, I've always been curious about how things work. I think kind of stereotypically as a kid, my parents would be like, "Can you plug in the VCR?" You know, remember the three audio visual and the two audio plugs, and the for whatever reason, the three cables were too much for my parents. So I was the go-to, figure out the technology kid. And I just liked knowing how things work. And to my dad's credit, we had a MS-DOS computer in our family room growing up. I think I was probably first grade something early on, and he would let me just play on it. I don't think he realized how many of the commands I had memorized at like watching him work on this computer, and that I probably could have done some damage unsupervised. But thankfully, I was cautious and just kind of poked around, and I just liked knowing. I remember being really interested in the folder structure and just kind of like navigating around and seeing what I could do. And we had some, games on the computer that I was really, really interested in. That's how I learned to type. There was this game, I think it took like four disks to load, you know, the big floppies, and it dropped the letter down from the top and you had to push the button before before it hit the bottom. So I would just like get on there and play games and poke around, and I just really liked it. I just really took to it. And same thing as we went through all the other versions of Windows in my house. Just really like computers. And as I was in high school, not sure what I wanted to do for my career, computers just stood out to me as something that I was interested in, something I understood, something I wanted to know more about, and something that I knew at the time I could make a living at, you know. And it was the only thing that really made sense to me as a career at the time, besides my silly, childish like desire to become a CIA agent from watching Alias too much. Like I was like, for a minute, I was like, I should go into the CIA so I can do what Jennifer Garner does. It was ridiculous. So I made the smart choice and went into IT and went to tech school, and yeah, I got my degree in computer and network, computer systems and network administration. So that's what I did, and what got me into it.
That's interesting. I love that you described the because I hold the opinion that some of the best techs, to your credit, it's a personality more than a hard skill, with regard to curiosity. And so it sounds like you manifested that early on, that curious spirit. So that's interesting.
I agree. Yeah. That
So
curious
tell,
spirit makes a big difference.
yeah. I like to put it like this, and you correct me if I'm wrong if there's a better way here, because I would love it. I don't know if it's perfect. It's the type of person that could get a puzzle for Christmas and their face lights up, which is an anomaly to other people, right? They're like, you give me a puzzle for Christmas. I was like, what's this? What are you
Yeah.
doing? But,
I think that's a good analogy. I mean, to your point, was at a tech conference recently, and there was a we were at a one of the nighttime events, and I had talked to, you know, done my networking and was feeling a little like done with all of that, and found this corner where one of the staff members was doing a puzzle, and I was like, can I also do this puzzle? And we just like were quiet in the corner, like doing this. It was perfect. And we did the puzzle, and I was like, this is it was nice.
That's
Every tech conference
fantastic.
should have a puzzle option.
That's fantastic. All right, for tech conferences out there listening, there you go, puzzles. And yeah. So, what was that first big move then in a tech? What was your first
Oh
big tech
yeah.
job?
So I did have a small jumping off point in St. Joe where I worked at a kind of a break fix, you know,
Gotcha.
before
Yep.
MSPs were a thing. So my first big role in IT where I got to utilize my network skills was or further utilize them, I should say, was as a network administrator for a nationwide concrete construction company.
Gotcha.
And eventually, and it was is headquartered in Tiffany Springs. So that's what brought me down into Kansas City. And eventually I ended up working for their parent company, the umbrella company that owns them, and that kind of branches out into all kinds of other companies, but mostly I worked for like the concrete or sorry, the construction group it was called. So that was interesting
Gotcha.
because I got to travel around and see all kinds of different networks, and felt yeah, felt like a pretty big move from the break fix, you know, fixing somebody that got viruses on their home computer situation that I was in previously. So
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. All right. So we need, so you became a network administrator. So you went from kind of a break fix scenario. So like you described it, you're fixing people's computers, got a virus, you know, which, is kind of it's early tech stuff. You know, we reset the computer to kind of a network administrator role for a larger company. What would be the size if you had to give a kind of a number of it to the company? I'm trying to gauge complexity
Yeah.
in my mind, or even
I'm
multiple
trying to
locations.
remember how many. I would say the staff were probably in the thousands, but the
Okay.
actual like computers that we were supporting were more for the business offices. So I would say somewhere around like 200
Sure.
endpoints.
Okay.
The main server location I think had 10 servers. Eventually we had a
Gotcha.
colo location, which was fun in downtown Kansas City, where we had server rack space and our early I don't know how nerdy we want to get, but I had the Zen server, Zen Cloud, I think it was called at the time, the early stuff
Excellent.
before
Yeah.
AWS took it, and got to have a cloud that uses a SAN backplane, and that was a good time. It was fun to play with all of that and really be that driving force for that cloud environment we were building internally.
All right, so I want to talk about this because there's two very interesting aspects. So somebody sees something in you to bring you from break-fix to that. Was it what maybe help me understand that? And then more importantly, what I really want to dive into, because I think this is important, because I think there's a little bit of a misnomer in tech in general that I think everybody can relate to, and it's that idea of like 10 years of experience, 20-year degree. But here's Kara quickly adapting to a very different environment just off the I like puzzles, and correct me if I'm wrong, kind of that's the driving force there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think an interesting part to your point too is that the degree that I obtained is an associate's degree. So it's not like I went to an extensive amount of school. And I think what's nice about tech, and I still find this true, is that as long as you have that curiosity and desire to learn and a mind for solving puzzles, I think that the skills can be taught to your, earlier point. And I think for me, I mean, I did have that, network administration degree and was definitely looking to utilize it. So when the network administrator position opened up, it was a really good move. It was just that next right fit. And I got in at a company with a supervisor who really thought along the same lines as us. Like, you can go and get certificates and degrees, but the point is, can you do the work? Are you adaptable? Do you want to learn more? Are you good with people? That was a big thing that I think was lacking in the workforce at the time when I came up in IT was the stereotypical, not good with people IT person. I don't think that's so true anymore. But at the time, a lot of the workforce didn't have the soft skills. And I think that that was a benefit for me. I think the I would that it's a good question what they saw in me that made them confident to bridge that gap from the break fix to, okay, you can be a network administrator at this like place that has seven locations nationwide. At the time, it was something like that, and you can we trust you to do that. I'm not sure what it was, but I imagine it had something to do with, those things we've been talking about. And I was nervous, it was a big jump. But it was a good fit, and I got a lot of great experience there. I was there for about 7 years.
Excellent. So this might be, maybe this is a decent segue, or maybe it should have happened earlier, the associates, I'm not sure. But one of the things you and I had talked about maybe discussing is social engineering. And I think this is probably where we can get the nerdiest, because social engineering, in my mind, is relevant outside of tech. And I think it has different terms depending on the field. So, for example, if we're in front of a psychiatrist and we say social engineering, they might not understand what that means, but they have a different term for it, right? Manipulative, psychopathic, I don't know, whatever you want to put it, right?
I think con artist is a good way to just like umbrella. It's a con,
There
right?
you
It's a con
go.
artist, yeah.
Yes, excellent. And it's one of the most popular ways to infiltrate a network, to perform a hack, to do the whole CIA thing, if you will, or
Yeah.
iRobot, or any of those movies. It's the one that it works. It works consistently. It works. So can we kind of talk about what? Well, I'll leave it to you. Can you define social engineering for everybody and kind of how you came to understand it and maybe that first real exposure to it? How about that you can
Sure.
remember?
Yeah, I would say my definition of social engineering is just an attempt to trick someone to gain information that eventually leads to the goal of whatever the scam is, right? Usually it's financial gain. For some cases it might be informational gain that you could eventually use for financial gain. But yeah, it's that attempt to trick someone to into believing that you're someone that you're not in order to get information. And how I came to understand it wasn't in this construction group role as a network administrator, really where I started. I don't think I've shared this with you. I think this is really interesting because. So when I came back into, we haven't talked about how I've burnt out yet, but when I came back into the workforce after burning out, I went to an MSP, local MSP, and which is a vendor that helps with help desk stuff and takes care of all of your network, usually all of your network and server needs. So I was working for a bunch of different smaller, medium business clients in the Kansas City area. And I was working on this QuickBooks problem. Anybody who works on QuickBooks knows you're often working on QuickBooks problems. And I'm looking up the support number to call and figure out who I need to or how to fix this problem because I wasn't getting to it myself. So I search engine look for QuickBooks support, and the first number that calls up, you probably know where this is going. I
I
call the first number
do.
that
I've
pops
seen this a
up.
lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a
And
popular one.
I had not seen this, so I didn't know to be careful. And so I call this number, and I let this person on the server, on the QuickBooks server. And they're poking around and they're like, okay, this is the problem. They pull up Notepad, they start writing things in Notepad. They're like, this is going to cost, $2,000 to fix or whatever it was. And just, started saying things that, with thankfully my tech brain, did not make sense, did not compute. And I finally realized that I was being scammed and, that they were, just going to. If I had paid that or had the client pay that, they would have just taken that and ran, and they weren't actually doing anything. But the scary thing to me, of course, at the time was the realization, oh no, I've let this unauthorized person who obviously doesn't work for QuickBooks on the server. And so I kicked them out and do like a full comb through of the server. Then it took a while to feel confident that they hadn't dropped any kind of backdoor on the system. But for me, that was a really clear experience of that social engineering, and it worked on me. And it was just to go back to that first phone number that came up on the search engine. It was an ad that was placed in an attempt to catch just this kind of thing. Someone needing support, not looking very hard at the search engine results and calling the first number that comes up and hopefully, gaining financially. So, I like to share that story because I think it's important to know that it is a trick. It and the whole point is that, they're catching you when you're distracted, when you're like, in this case, I was, worried about the accounting server not being accessible for, it already been a couple of hours and it was payday, I was under a specific type of stress in that situation that led me to not pay as close of attention as I should have been to where I was calling. And that speaks to the nature of the of social engineering in the first place. So I think that experience was really poignant for me to recognize social engineering, to think about deeply about how to prevent it, in my clients' environments, in wherever I worked in the future. And I think it's interesting because that understanding about how people work and the curiosity about like I have that curiosity about how people work. And I think that that benefits me in my IT role in ways that I would have never anticipated until I've been in this role more in a security function and trying to prevent things like this because we don't want we don't want hackers and scammers getting access to sensitive information. So I can't remember your question. I'm sorry.
No,
I
you're good.
went
I
on
mean,
that story
it was
and
what is social engineering, and you answered it, and you gave a very
yeah.
relevant example. So thank you so much. And part of what I want to pull from this too, and what I think I like about social engineering, is something about the term and the way we approach it seems less emotional than like a psychiatrist's office and talking about. But you're giving an example that is relevant to everybody. Like, how often have we been in a scenario where stress was high and the time was just right? Most of the time, in the case of scammers and hackers and technology, it's like 4:30 on a Friday, right? And it's an urgent
Right.
email from the CEO, quote unquote. And it's exactly right. They're trying to time it, high stress, and then they do an emotional pull, right? Which that. You know, I like one of these security awareness training programs. I think we're familiar with the same one, Ninjio.
Yeah.
They started to add, what did they call it? They call it emotional triggers or tips or something like that, where when there's an emotional element component to it, a fear or a shame or a, that's when you can kind of start to see maybe that you're being duped or have been duped.
Right. The
And
sense of
I,
urgency there and the fear, yeah, is for
yeah,
sure a marker.
100%. And so I don't know. I struggle to give active examples because of the way and how we look at it, but I just feel like it's largely relevant in everyday life. Well, here's the example, because and I was thinking about this early on. I was trying to think how we would get back to this. I made a point to make a note of it. So, kind of diving back to the sexual assault aspect, right? And then how many times, and you said we agreed that it doesn't have a gender, it doesn't have a race, it's just, anybody can be a victim and anybody can be a perpetrator. And then I was thinking back on how many cases probably aren't reported among men
Right.
or women, because it's something that, and it's pervasive. It's way more common than we realize. It is, I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong,
Yes,
because
I agree.
not as many people are as eager to report it or talk about it to their family or their friends or and what's interesting is those people that they would talk to or maybe also and so then that there's that fear or shame or emotional component that allows the perpetrator to continue on. And I think that's directly applicable to a social near engineering aspect, right? For gain. And so, anyway, I don't know. But what I like about social engineering is that it pulls out the emotional element a little bit. You start to just, when you see people attempting to do those things, manipulate you essentially using emotion, you can kind of start to like, ah, that's no, that's a red
Right.
flag. so to speak.
Well, and the shame is a useful emotion for the hacker, the con artist, the social engineer, as well, because and we were talking about this earlier before we got recording, but one thing I've really identified in the whole life cycle of a social engineer attack is the fear of reporting and talking about this it could be ongoing, it could be something that happened yesterday or this morning, you know, where you realize, oh no, I think there's something off about that, but you don't report it because you're like, oh, you feel ashamed or embarrassed. I was tricked. How did I believe that? Like, why did I or why did I click that link? Or and you start to blame yourself. And I think it's interesting. There is kind of a parallel in how that works for perpetrators of sexual violence to continue their, you know, criminal acts is they really can rely on people feeling ashamed and not reporting. And not to compare the two, but I think what's interesting about social engineering is that shame is useful for the people who are trying to continue scamming, right? Because the less we report it, the less we know about it, that could continue their attack. Maybe they were able to get in and establish a foothold in an environment. And if we don't know, I say we as in like the IT department, if we don't know that something's going on or that there was a red or an orange flag, we may not notice that for some time. So that there's a deeper issue happening. So one thing I've worked at Moxa in particular to do is to change that culture of, you know, am I going to get in trouble if I click a link? Am I, because we tell people, you know, don't click the links, don't put in your, you know, don't, this is how you identify an email. And so we put all this pressure on people to be the, like, the stopgap, the, like, you know, don't do all these things. But then I think it's important to say, and if you do, we need to know as soon as possible, and you're not going to be in trouble. And the reason we need to know as soon as possible is because we have a lot more tools at our disposable or at our disposal early on to stop this, or to correct it, or to limit the damage than if we don't know. And I've shared that story about the QuickBooks server thing, with staff. At Moxa too, in helping bridge that gap of like, if I'm a pretty educated, skilled IT person getting tricked by these social engineers, like I hope that that's an example that anybody can be tricked into it too. And so, like, please just talk about it. So.
No, 100%. And I have a really good example actually on the early on, and so we had a we there was a there was a formal scenario under in a past life where a clinic had been recently hacked and ransomware, and so it was a recent endeavor. So I mean, on negative note, the worst that could happen happened. On a positive note, everybody was kind of on high alert afterwards, and so a nurse flew up an alarm, and fortunately they were already suspicious, and so they drew me to it. And this is like the perfect example too of like and I came up and I told her, I said, I don't care where you went or what you did, but I need you to redo it for me now. And they pulled up Google menu for local restaurant, and they went to the legitimate restaurant's website. But the moment you clicked menu, they had hacked the website, and the menu was downloading viruses.
Oh
And
no.
so even more fascinating was I got to call the local restaurant. So at first I had to find out their headquarters. There was a couple different locations for this one. And then I called, and it was really interesting because it was like Google at the time, and I think they still might, although they might have changed things. So at the time, if Google detected a virus on the website, it would actually flag like this website's been hacked and is downloading
Right.
viruses.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so I haven't seen that for a little bit, so I'm guessing maybe they're just delisting them. But I called and I got to the general manager for the store, and I was like, "Hey, don't click on it, but just Google your website and trust me when I say it's been hacked and it's infecting a local clinic here, so please fix it." And it
Yeah.
was kind of funny because the person was like, anyway, they went on with the natural flow, and then as soon as they saw it, they were like, "Oh." Oh, I need to call the web developer. I was like, cool,
Yeah.
thank you.
Yeah, that's
So
not something
yeah.
you would expect, right? Like you're going to the
No.
legitimate website and there would be no flags unless Google caught it
A
or
hundred
your
percent.
AV caught it. Yeah. Did
Right,
the
and
AV
that's
catch
yeah.
it in that case? Is that how you knew that the it was a virus?
I think in this case, I don't even know if it downloaded. I mean, it was a thin client with an AV, so there was like multiple layers of protection there. But I think it was the nurse proactively noting like, "Hey, this is just weird. Can you
I
look at
see.
it?"
Yeah.
Or to your point, I do think the system threw up a flag. It was a two-pronged thing, and I don't fully remember it. It's been so long. But yeah, it's interesting. So let's talk about then the burnout aspect of things.
Yeah.
So what in tech drove you to burnout? And
Oh,
I think you
well.
were even talking about going as far as like, I want out of tech.
Oh yeah. I never wanted to look at a computer again. I was like, I never. I was out of the IT space for about 3 years, I think, in total.
Well, that's a decent stint. So
It
you
was
really
significant.
were.
I was sure that I was not going back. For at least the first 2 years, I was convinced that I needed to figure something else out. So yeah, what led to that was so I was at the construction group, network administrator role, and
Okay.
really dove in deep for a long time. And I think like a lot of IT roles, I didn't have good boundaries with work. I think a normal work week was anywhere from I think a typical work week was 50 hours. So when things were difficult, it was more than that, so challenging, putting out fires, weeks would be, I think the worst weeks would be upwards of 60, close to 70 hours, like when things were really wrong. So that's, I think that's kind of typical or was typical for a lot of IT roles, when I was coming into the workforce. Was
Now,
just expected that, yeah.
can you help me understand the just so I can fully understand what was consuming the 50 hour, like were you constantly kind of behind the ball trying to catch up, or was it just the nature of the size of the business they're putting in that many tickets? Or and this is I guess this is
Yeah.
more of a curious question, just since I'm in the role, I'm just trying to make sure I understand.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think at the time I had an eye for understanding the inefficiencies or maybe the imbalances in the workforce that were creating this. But as I've kind of reflected, so I can't necessarily speak to like perhaps there weren't enough help desk staff for this environment. It did feel often like we were behind, like there was never
Okay.
enough hours to get everything we needed to get done. So I'm sure there was
Gotcha.
a staffing issue there.
And you said struggling to say no, so maybe texts and
There
phone
was,
calls and stuff.
so there's, getting getting a call from, a higher up on Friday at 6 p.m.,
Yeah.
it would be expected that you would handle that. But the problem, and I don't think that maybe that's any different now, but the except that that there was no really respect for that work life balance. So people didn't think twice to call, the IT person on a weekend or an evening. And as a network administrator, I'm, any ISP issue, any basically any internet issue, any access to server issue, I was the one that got called. And I should say, the IT department itself really like wanted to have a good work-life balance. It was just the nature of, I think it was the nature of IT work at the time where it just like you were just expected to be there, and
Yeah,
available.
yeah.
And so there wasn't a lot of off time, which was fine when I was young and didn't know I needed a work-life balance and really wanted to. I would have had a home lab if I didn't work so much at work when I was at home. So I wanted to
Yeah.
live in IT all the time, I guess is what I'm saying. And so it was fine
I
for a
understand.
while. And then I had my kiddo, and he was young, and I wanted to be home with him as much as possible. And I was still traveling for work, and I think that was really the kicker that made me realize that I didn't have the balance that I needed, and I needed to prioritize my family. I think I would have burnt out anyway. It might have taken another 2 years, but it happened a little earlier because I had my kiddo. So I had my young child at home, and I was just like, my priorities are not straight. And I was struggling. Oh, also, I think this is important because I think I didn't know what burnt out looked like, and so my work performance was suffering. I was like, I wasn't getting projects done. I also had undiagnosed ADHD at the time, so that was a huge part of it. So all of those factors came together, and I was just done. I was like, this is not where I want to be. And it's interesting to tie this back to, but the cousin I mentioned early on in our interview that passed away. So when that happened, I think that was right around the same time. Let me get my timeline right. I think she passed away, and I was like, I don't know why I'm doing this. Like, it just kind of upset the whole balance of my life, and I was like,
Yeah.
I need a better, and I thought the problem was I hated IT work. I didn't recognize at the time that the problem was that I was burning out, that there was an
Yeah.
imbalance in my work life, and that I needed to have better boundaries and have a better job fit and have a priority for my family. I thought, I hate computers. I never want to see one again. I want to throw them all out the window and run away to the mountains. Which I still think about sometimes. I love being in the mountains, but not as an escape to get away from computers. So yeah, that's how I ended up in the situation where I just never wanted to see a screen or type on a keyboard again. And so I went and was a barista for a while. I was like, I like coffee. I can get up early in the morning. My husband at the time took our kiddo to daycare. I got up early, opened the coffee shop, roasted the coffee, saw the sun come up every morning. It was a nice break for a time from IT. So, yeah.
So was that was good then? Ultimately, the
It
break,
was
the
it was
break.
good. It was needed for sure. And there was definitely a time where I enjoyed that and found it much more it's easy to leave your work at work
Yeah.
in this kind of environment. It doesn't follow you home. There's nobody pulling up to your house window asking for a latte. So
Right. No, that's such a great way of putting that. So Do you have some advice on how to spot burnout from somebody that hasn't had it yet? Because I think for those of us that have been burned out two or three times, it becomes easier to see. But
Right.
the
Yeah.
very notion that it would be hard to see, which you've drawn attention to quite well, and I think it is. I think it's when you're smack dab in the middle of it, it's like the problem is the company I'm at, which probably is, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
But
I think it was a factor for sure. Yeah.
it's the career I'm in, right? It's just all
Right.
technology. All technology sucks. It's, you know,
Right.
you're pointing to everything but I need a vacation.
Right. An actual vacation where I'm not
Right.
called up, which I think is
In the
hard to
mountains
find
with
in
no cell
IT.
signal.
Yeah, in the mountains with no cell signal. I think that the one factor that made me think that it was IT in general was that it was my understanding, maybe misunderstanding at the time, that like this is just how the industry is and this is what I can expect no matter where I go. So because of that, I thought that I had to leave, that I, you know what I mean? But as far as spotting it, for me, I can speak to my experience. Definitely, going from being very motivated and enjoying the work to feeling like it was pulling teeth to get there to get anything done. This is a feature of ADHD too, but I was good at putting out fires. I was not good at managing long-term projects, and that just got worse as I got burnt out because my ability to care about the work I was doing just was diminished. And unfortunately, you know, I think it because I didn't recognize it, and I think because management didn't recognize maybe what was happening. It looked like I'm a poor employee, right? I think that that's how it can show up. It looks like you're a poor employee. So, and I felt that about myself. Like this is clearly I'm not a fit for this. This isn't good work for me. But I think that stark contrast between this is something I enjoy and I'm curious about and I thrive in to just being a poor employee or like heading that direction can be a sign of burnout. And a vacation is like a band-aid for that. Once you get so far along there, you know, it's like it's not a fix. It's especially if you're like, I don't want to go back to work at the end of it. You know, I think yeah, it can be a band-aid. And so that's how it showed up for me. And I wish I would have recognized it sooner. It would have been really helpful to me to recognize that that was what was going on, because I think there were ways to address it and fix it that I didn't have access to because I didn't realize what was happening.
Right. No, it's hard too, and it's easier. You know, I just kind of realized in this moment how to put it into words for me is it's a sign when I feel like, at least for me, when I feel like I'm no longer in control of my own destiny, like
Yeah.
I'm just going through the motions, but then I also feel trapped by the motions. That's like the number one indicator. And the more often I feel that way, the more I am headed straight toward it.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
it's funny. That's where, yeah, some days it's just like I'm taking those personal days are bigger than people realize because it
Yeah.
what better way to remind myself that I'm in charge of my own destiny than to say, okay, there was nothing planned for today. There's no urgent matters. I'm gonna call in a personal day. I'm just
Right.
gonna go to the park and stare into the abyss because I want to.
Right. That's it. And I think I think that the workforce in general and IT included, the organizations and companies have really recognized that in the last 10 years, especially I think COVID had a big part to do with that as well, where it's there's more encouragement to take those days. I mean, I'm sure there's still environments where there's a stigma associated with actually even taking your vacation days. But I think that there's more options available now of work environments that support that balance than there used to be. I'll say this, and I know you're getting ready to ask me a question, but I think
You're good.
this is kind of an important part of it. What I've found now that I'm in a work environment that does support that work-life balance is I still have elements of difficulty saying no to things. I have, sometimes a desire to be available in case something happens while I'm on vacation. And those things can contribute to, a poor work-life balance that is my problem that I've brought into the situation that I'm still, working on sorting out for myself. So, because I'm in an environment now that like wants me to take those vacation days and doesn't want me to be available while I'm gone. So.
So I want to talk about a little bit of that too, because you brought up work-life balance a couple times, and I kind of want to get your take on this because, so I was talking with another business owner, and he and I kind of jived on the notion that work-life balance is a little bit of a lie per se, and we believe heavily in the notion of work-life integration. And where that came from is you want to do something that feeds into your life, that's a calling, that's something bigger than yourself. Now, that doesn't mean you should work 60, 50, 60, 70 hours, never be able to unplug, not have boundaries, not care about your family, but an environment instead where it's like you can almost show up with your kid, right? And you're like, you want to like, hey, this is my kiddo. You seem to care a lot about me, so I thought you'd care to meet my kiddo. And they support that kind of a thing, right? That work-life integration. What are kind of, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that, I guess? Is it, because I'm trying to understand, I don't think any of us want a job, at least I don't. Where and maybe you where you kind of clock in at 9 and you leave at 5, right? And it's like the job itself might absolutely suck, but I've got this family over here and that's awesome. So the job is allowed to suck because I get to clock in and clock out and shut it off. But by contrast, right, if we're not careful, that notion that we're all family here, right, can be taken advantage of. Next thing you know, you're working really long hours, right? And the moment you're left, anyway. So, I don't know. I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what's kind of that balance, I guess.
That's an interesting phrase, work-life integration. I like it. I hadn't heard that before. And I think that there are elements to my work now that and the way that I see that balance that fits in this definition of work-life integration that you've given. To your point about being passionate about something, I find that my ability to utilize my technical skills to further a mission like Moxa's is really valuable to me and makes me more passionate about the work that I'm doing and the skills that I'm gaining because it means a lot to me that I get to I can never work in direct service. I can never be a counselor in this situation, but I get to utilize my skills and further their mission. And that means it's a level of satisfaction and purpose in my role, my work life that I never expected to have from IT. So that's really nice. And I think that there is some crossover. Some sort of overlap in this Venn diagram of work and life, where the things I care about at home are supported by Moxa and vice versa. And to your point, I have brought my kiddo into work and been like, yeah, this is this is him. This is who I talk about.
That's great.
I like this. I'm still processing what you're saying about it, but I like that idea of work-life integration, especially not to the point where it's like, it's following you home in ways that interfere with your life. We're not talking about that.
Well, and one thing I think non, because you brought up another good point too. One thing I think nonprofits tend to do better than for profits, in my opinion, and I think for profits can learn from, is nonprofits do a really good job of this is our mission and we're making a positive impact in the community. And I think for profits in many cases are doing that too. The problem is, right? It's like, we're not talking about the concrete foundation we poured for the church, or we're talking about, oh, we just pour concrete and make money. And it's like, well, and it's upsetting too, because I think next generations are higher up Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where they, that food and shelter are more or less taken care of, such that I don't want to just pour concrete and make money. I want to help my community. I want to be part of something bigger. I want work-life integration. Cool. So anyway, this is tricky because you and I are starting to go long, which I don't necessarily mind, but I also want to be conscious of your time. So maybe we kind of start to catch up a little bit. So, tell me about coming out of burnout. We probably got to talk about that. What brought you back?
So after a couple years of, staunchly anti-computer, I never want to be on them except
Gotcha.
for video games ish.
Sure.
I really realized that I do like working with computers. That curiosity started to come back, the desire to utilize my skills, and also the recognition that that as far as a career goes, it was really well suited for me. And there's this huge wealth of skill set that I could continue to develop, which is really how I'm wired. I want to keep learning, right? And I think you can do that forever with computers. So I begin to get more curious about them again. And wanted to see and started to recognize too that what I had been experiencing was burnout and not just a wrong fit of a career. And so I started to wonder what it might look like to work part-time in IT, which I'd never really encountered part-time jobs in IT, but thought, what if it was just part-time? That would be pretty easy to have a balance there. And I
That's
just
funny because I think the reason there's not as many IT part-time functions is because I mean, I'll just shout myself out. We run under the assumption that why would anybody want that? Why it's you want full time or nothing. Because I
I
mean,
think
there's
that's
plenty of
a
businesses out there, I'm sure, that are like, oh, if only I could find
part-time IT
part-time
person.
Kara. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a really good fit for me at the time because my son was still young. And I should say this too, as soon as I started thinking that, like seriously thinking, I think I'm ready to look for a part-time job. A longtime friend of mine sat across from me at the coffee shop I was working at and was like own his own IT company and was like, would you be interested in part-time work? And I had not told anybody. And I was like, there we go. Like it's, it was perfect. And so
Things happen
so
when
that's
they're
how I got
supposed
back
to
into it.
sometimes.
Yeah. It just fell in line. I think I've been fortunate in my career
Yeah.
that at those right times something has presented itself and I've been open to it. I think that's an important part. I was looking for it. I was interested. But gosh, that is like the timing. I if you would have asked me 4 months earlier, I would have had absolutely no interest. But yeah, I was looking for part-time work, especially because I wasn't sure how to have that balance, if it was possible, maybe work-life integration with a full-time IT position. And I still was really interested in the flexibility of being there for my family in ways that I felt like a full-time position wouldn't have supported. So, or at least not that I hadn't seen examples of a full-time position that was flexible enough to be there for my family. So yeah,
Sure.
that's how I got back into it, and it was a perfect fit for several years.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And you got back in and it reignited the spark.
It did.
And here you are. And
Here
you
I am.
found Moxa.
That was the next right fit again. It just when I read over the job description, I was like, this is exactly like my it was a perfect fit.
Yeah.
So it was pretty exciting.
That's beautiful. Yeah, that's really cool. That's cool to hear and think about. This has been you have a fantastic story.
Oh, thanks.
Can you so as we kind of start to come to a bit of a close now, I suppose. We have a motto over here, and that's if we have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. What's a giant in your life that you would like to recognize? Somebody that has helped you in your journey?
A good question. I think that to close, and it to kind of like come full circle and call back to my family. I feel like my dad has always supported my curiosity and given room for that to grow. Just like again, that DOS computer, just letting this little 7-year-old play around on it and supporting that curiosity, I think was foundational to developing my eventual skill set in computers. And not just that, but he's got a business mind and has been a point of just support and talking lots about what is the next right move for me. And I think my mom too, she's always been there as a support, always been in the kind of stereotypical male female divide, that emotional support and really supported that vulnerability and conversation and interest in people. And I think those two pieces are have been really important to me. So yeah, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about my mom and dad and those shoulders of giants. And I think that my supervisor at the concrete construction company was super foundational as well, because he was very smart, very supportive, very I think touches a lot on the qualities that we've discussed here that makes a really good fit for being in IT, but just gave me these like little pieces of information that I really needed to support me throughout my career. So yeah, I thank him too. It's a good question.
Thank you, and I can't help but it's for some reason for me it's your answers are particularly beautiful because in the early discussion of your family it was there was turmoil, and then for the construction company there was turmoil, and yet through these you have giants that have supported you, and so I think it calls to the beauty of nuance in life, where so often we want to put things and people and institutions in boxes, but never is it that simple, is it?
It never is.
So the last bit is how can people kind of plug in with Moxa And is there a channel that people could reach out to you if they had any sort of questions or anything?
Sure. So for Moxa, all of our access to services and even any questions about supporting the organization, because of course we are a nonprofit and accept donations and have events where you can come and support Moxa. All of those questions really go through our crisis line. So it's kind of a maybe you want to know that, that you would just call our crisis line to get even information. So that's all on our website, moxa.org, which is MOCSA.org. And as far as contacting me, if there's more questions, I think that's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. Well, I mentioned that my LinkedIn, I'm gonna open back up. So I think you could find me on LinkedIn. You could also find me through Moxa. I'll have I believe my contact information will be on the website in a month or two, I was told. So there's that. But yeah, LinkedIn's probably a good place to go.
Excellent. Fantastic. Thank you
Yeah.
so much for joining me today, Kira.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Sam. It's been nice to talk with you.
Have a good one, everybody.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.